Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stepped on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Smart wants baseline, cut off by Hayes right side. He'll bring it back out on the dribble. Now to Waters, up top. Tremont, crossover, deep three, top of the key. Good! Oh, my! 70-70, Tremont Waters, with his first triple of the night, ties the game 70-all.
That's why Will Wade stays with him. You never know.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parts III, host of Rap Game with RP3. Here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, and this is the Fast and Furious edition of the Rap Game. Coming up at 10:32, our friend Brady Amon will have our old-school wrestling talk at that time. And that'll be followed by Andrew Lopez of NOLO.com. He's going to come on and give us any updates about the New Orleans Pelicans' Anthony Davis situation. That'll be coming up around 10:45 to 10:46 today. But we're going to lead off this Fast and Furious edition of the show with the disappointing loss inside the PMAC last night for the LSU men's basketball team. They fell in overtime, 82-77 to Florida. Florida is, we talked about it all week, how Florida was a far better team than their record suggested. They entered last night's game 14-11, and Mike White's squad was the best defensive team in the SEC, at holding opponents well under 65 points a game. They were a decent three-point shooting team, but they struggled to score, and that's why they had 11 losses. And we talked about how LSU could not look past Florida. We talked about that 1-2-2 press and how it has frustrated many an opponent this season. And LSU could not handle that 1-2-2 press. They just couldn't. They struggled against it all night long. Tremont Waters had 10 points. That three that you heard came in overtime. That tied the game, but it wasn't enough. And we've said it before. When Tremont Waters plays at a high level, LSU is nearly impossible to beat. He was not good last night. Florida did a terrific job on Tremont Waters. They took him out of the game. They took him out of his rhythm. He never was able to get going. And when Waters can't get going and he can't play at a very good level or a great level, LSU struggles. Naz Reid had a double-double. The young man, the freshman who's coming into his own, 16-15. Big Me Williams chipped in 10 and 6 boards. Skylar Mays kind of picked up a little bit of the slack. He scored 18. But Javonte Smart, 4 points. And they could never get past it. It was a tight game from jump at half. It was a 2-point game. LSU was trailing. LSU forced overtime, tied it up. But in overtime, Florida just pulled away for the 82-77 win. And for LSU, this is immensely disappointing because they had everything in front of them. They had everything in front of them. With them beating Kentucky last week, and then Kentucky turning around and beating Tennessee, they were in the driver's seat. They controlled their own destiny to win the regular season SEC championship. they had to get past Florida. And then on this coming Saturday, they welcome Tennessee to town, who's now the number five team in the country. They were number one. And it's just, look, Florida's a good team. Florida's going to be an NCAA tournament team. They're going to be a low seed. They're going to get in. And the way they play defense and the fact that they can shoot three-pointers is going to give them a chance to upset someone in the first round. Florida's a gutty team. But LSU, for whatever reason, as talented as they are with Waters and Reed and Skylar Mays, they sometimes they struggle with teams that are below them. We've seen this before a couple weeks ago when they lost at home to a bad Arkansas team. They needed overtime on the road to beat that same bad, mediocre Arkansas team. They struggled against a very bad Missouri team and needed to come back and to beat them. They struggled putting away a bad, an atrocious Georgia team. They play up to the competition, and for whatever reason, this team plays down to the competition. They beat Kentucky last week in a spectacular fashion in Lexington. And then turn around and struggle against a very bad Georgia team. And they let one get by them again. They've played five overtime games this season. They played five. But LSU could not keep up with Florida last night, in particular Florida's Keevon Allen, who Sheldon Mickles talked to us about yesterday on the show, that he could be a key to this game. Allen scored only 9 points in regulation. Nine. And then he went on to score 12 of his team's 18 points in overtime to get his team a victory that all but ensures now that Florida is going to make the NCAA tournament. Finished with a game high 21. And LSU had a chance to win this game in regulation. Florida was whistled for the shot clock violation with what, about 6 seconds left to go? But Waters' long three-point field goal attempt at the buzzer was way off, so they had to go to overtime. It's just the second loss for LSU in the past 16 games. So let's put things in perspective. They still are having a tremendous season. And they can bounce back on Saturday in the PMAC for a game that you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game, pregame 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, tip at 11. By taking down the number five team in the country. They're still making the NCAA tournament. But now they're dropped down into a second place tie in the SEC with Kentucky. And both Kentucky and LSU are now one game behind Tennessee. So if LSU beats Tennessee on Saturday, boom, there you go. They're right back in the driver's seat, right? And we talked about how good this LSU team has been at playing up to the competition. When the team is ranked, when the team is highly regarded, LSU is amped up, focused, raring to go. They come out, they give their best effort. When the team is not, LSU just sleepwalks. They don't execute as well. They're not as crisp. And that's probably more of a mental thing. Because here's the thing. We can't keep using the same excuse that they're a young team. February is almost in the books. They've been together this long. They're no longer a young team. And even though they can still get back on track and get a share of the SEC regular season championship and possibly the one seed in the conference tournament if they take care of business on Saturday against the visiting Vols, listen to what Will Wade had to say after the game, and you let me know if he is thinking positive thoughts following last night's overtime loss.
It's embarrassing we've lost two home games. We're 7-0 in the SEC on the road, and we've lost two home games. I feel terrible for our fans and hard-earned people that work and put their money to come watch us play. It's sickening to me. Sickening to me. Absolutely sickening.
Sickening. And he's right. How, once again, how does this team beat the likes of Kentucky and somehow find a way to lose to Arkansas and Florida at home? They lost to home. It's supposed to be the rebirth of the Def Dome inside the PMAC. They're at home. For crying out loud, they were at home with the home crowd. And by the way, we don't have a ton of time to get to this, but all those fans that left early last night, let's be real, you guys kind of suck. Your team is playing at home. They're nationally ranked. They are the talk of the town. They're the talk of the state. And even though they're losing in overtime, y'all can't stick around to watch it. Like, I've been to the PMAC. The traffic ain't that bad to get out of there, bro. What, you need to go see Mike the Tiger? It was cold and rainy last night. I don't think he was out, especially at that time of night. Like, no excuse. Come on, LSU fan. Or more in particular, LSU basketball fan. Three overtime wins for the Tigers this year. On the road. Arkansas, Missouri, Mississippi State. Mississippi State's the only one that may be a tournament team. They were ranked in the coaches' poll at the time that LSU beat them on the road. Arkansas and Missouri, no. You know, we've talked about it. Waters has to play at a high level, and also Javonte Smart have to. Both of those guys, both of those guards have to play at high levels. And if they don't, LSU is always going to be in trouble, and they're always going to be vulnerable to lose a game. And that's exactly what happened last night. Congratulations to head coach Mike White and the Florida Gators. They came into the PMAC. They had a chip on their shoulder. They had a game plan. Their game plan was to take Waters and Smart out of the game. That's what they did with that 1-2-2 press, and they ended up winning the game because of it. So congratulations to them. They earned the victory. And now LSU only has a few days to pick themselves off the mat and try to take down Tennessee, so this thing doesn't get out of control and quickly. We'll talk more about this game when we come back after this break, right here on The Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Ricky Bobby.
Shake it back.
Happy Gilmore.
You're gonna die, clown!
Gordon Bombay.
The real Minnesota Miracle Man.
And Peter LaFleur.
You want to become a cheerleader to prove to a girl that you are not a loser? High school's changed a little bit since I was a kid.
These are sports heroes that we can all look up to. Back to the show with the host who's got a tattoo of each one. Rap Game with RP3.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Let's talk a little bit more about that disappointing loss last night for the LSU Tigers. And this is interesting to me. And credit to Scott Rabelais, friend of the station from the Baton Rouge Advocate. He wrote a column about last night's game. And he made some very interesting and astute points. He says, LSU can hang with and beat the long, athletic, muscle car outfits like Kentucky, teams like themselves. But a bunch of height-challenged scrappers like the Gators, led by a bulldog point guard like Florida's Andrew Nembhard from Canada, who had 8 points, 8 assists, and 3 steals in the game. Those teams know how to line the tumblers on the Tigers' vault. And he's right. Nembhard's 6'5", So he had the height advantage on Waters all night, and it played a huge role because Waters was only 3 of 12 from the field, including missed three-pointers at the end of regulation, and to tie it with about 12 seconds left in the extra period. Did Will Wade see this coming? Quote, "Oh, hell yeah," Wade said in a frank and borderline angry postgame press conference. "This is the same type of team Missouri is." Now, in that game, height challenged, undervalued, scrappy team, LSU was down by 14 to a very bad Missouri team. Now, they were able to rally on the road and then ended up winning the game in overtime. Quote from Will Wade, "Certain type teams give us problems. We don't have the stuff to beat some of these type teams. We're either going to develop it or this is how our season is going to end. We have areas where we've got to get better or we're going to get exposed. We know that. We haven't improved as rapidly need in certain areas." That's the head coach of the LSU men's basketball team talking about how he knows how his team is going to lose in the matchups that they're going to face. And we've said this before, the transition defense is key for this team. But they've lost to Arkansas. They struggled against a bad Missouri team, and they've lost to the Florida Gators. That there is a blueprint of teams that, A, play hard, that may be undersized but play good defense, and are a little undervalued. And I think it's a combination of those things. Now, once again, LSU can ride the ship, so to speak, on Saturday. If they take down Tennessee, who's the number 5 team in the country, the loss to Florida is not really going to matter. Because then they're going to be tied with, then they'll be tied with Tennessee in the standings, still a game up on Kentucky, and they'll be in the driver's seat to get that regular season championship. Their first since 2009. But another thing that worries me as an LSU, as someone who follows the LSU program, this is an immensely talented team. They're having a terrific season. It's middle of February. You're at home against a conference opponent. Florida wanted it more. Like, Florida came in there playing for their postseason lives. There was a sense of urgency with the Gators. There was not with LSU. We're past the halfway point of February, guys. How are you not getting up? How are you not just as amped up as Florida is? And Naz Reid said this after the game. Quote, "They simply wanted it more than us. They're a really tough team. I can't say anything beside the fact that they clearly wanted it more." Skylar Mays went on to say, "It was not the level of desperation we needed to play with." Quote, "You could tell in the first 4 minutes it was going to be a street fight. They got all the 50-50 balls. When it goes like that, it's hard to win." So the biggest question for this LSU team, why in the hell are you not ready to play? Because that's what it comes down to. They allowed Florida to come in their house, the PMAC, and punch them in the mouth. And they barely kept the fight going on. They were barely able to get it going. And they ended up losing to a team that is inferior to them in all facets of the game, talent, depth, height. Yet, Florida was the team that wanted it more. Florida was a team that had more to play for. It is the middle of February, towards the tail end of the month. There is no excuse for not being amped up. There is no excuse not to be ready to play a game. There is no excuse to allow an inferior team coming in your house and punking you and taking a win away from you. And it's happened now twice in the past 3 weeks. When Will Wade says it's sickening, He means it. Once again, they have an opportunity to flush this victory, flush this loss behind them, and get a victory on Saturday against the number five team in the country. But we're to the point of the season now where there shouldn't be inconsistencies. You should be trending in the right direction. You should be playing at your maximum ability and potential. Why is this LSU team not doing that? It's a legitimate question, and one that I wasn't thinking we'd be asking today heading into last night's game. When we come back, our friend Brady Amon will join us for some old-school wrestling talk right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, home of the LSU Tigers.
Everybody loves Raymond. And everybody loves the end of a commercial break. This must be a good moment for you. Let's get back to Rap Game with RP3. Old school wrestling talk with the tag team duo of RP3 and Brady.
Oh, hell yeah!
Ray is the former Demolition Fan Club president, Southeast Chapter. The Demolition, walking disaster. And the innovator of a devastating move called the Gator Lock. Brady is the 10-time Willow Street Wrestling Federation tag team champion. And he once shook hands with One Man Gang. Time for some old school wrestling talk.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parts III. We're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend, the one and only, the Port Barry native, Port Barry legend, Brady Amon. Brady, how are you this morning, brother?
Man, I don't know about legend, but I'll take it. I'm doing well. How are you, Ray?
I'll take it. I love it. I'm doing well, too, brother. I'm doing well. Look, man, I thought for this week, for our old school wrestling talk, I was kind of inspired by catching my first house show. First live wrestling show earlier this week when I went to Monday Night Raw at the Cajun Dome, and we had privilege enough to have Natalia here, part of the Hart family legacy of wrestling. So I thought that would be a great topic for us to kind of talk about this week about, you know, some of the best families of wrestling, so to speak. When we talk, you know, family legacy, a lot of people think of football. They always think the Mannings, right? The Manning legacy, the Manning family. In football, but wrestling, it seems like there's, I don't know, dozens of these historic family outfits that are out there that have provided generation after generation of tremendous wrestlers. For you, I'm going to assume the first, when you think of families of wrestling, the first people that come to mind for you, being an old Mid-South AWA guy, are going to be the Von Erichs, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's, you know, I think a lot of people kind of refer to them as the first family of wrestling, you know, with Fritz kind of starting it off as a wrestler way back in the, you know, 40s or 50s, and then he carries it on with all his sons. And, you know, there was one of those charismatic families. Obviously, all the guys were, you know, well-liked by the crowd and, you know, just kind of carried that wrestling promotion over there, World Slash Championship Wrestling over in Dallas, kind of carried that on his back. And then, you know, Kerry ended up going on and having some success in other organizations. But, yeah, it really did start down there in Texas with the Von Erichs, and they kind of were the first ones, I guess, that started that lineage of it kind of it becoming a family business for a lot of people. Now you see it, like you said, a lot with the Hart family and the you know, other family, Dusty Rhodes kind of carried on with his kids, the Funks, the Ortons. It just kind of became a family business for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it seems like if you look at some of the most popular wrestlers and the biggest, the wrestlers that had the biggest impact, they're usually legacy guys, right? I mean, you think of the Poffos, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage and his brother Leaping Lanny, their father, Angelo, was, you know, a great heel for like in the 50s and 60s. So that's where they learned the business from. They learned it from their pop, and they followed in his footsteps in the 70s, and they carved out their own career. You mentioned the Funks. That's another one, the Ordens. You know, everyone thinks of Randy now, but, you know, his father was a huge name in wrestling back in the day, the Guerreros. Eddie's dad, right, him and all his brothers wrestled. Eddie's the most famous of the bunch, but his father was a great villain in Mexico in, like, the 60s. You know, so it's just when you look at that and, you know, we start off with the Von Erichs and what they meant to Texas. The Rhodes, that's another one, you know, that had an immense amount of success with Dusty and then obviously his son Dustin, a.k.a. Gold Dust, had a huge impact. And then we can't forget about The Rock. You know, that's another one of the big first families of wrestling. I know a lot of people kind of forget that. They know that The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, was connected. Wrestling was a family business, but that was a long-standing family business before The Rock even got involved or even reluctantly got into the wrestling game.
Yeah, you talked about that, the NOR family, and that, you know, I'm privileged because, I live here in Pensacola now, and that's where that family is not, they live here now. Sika lives here. Obviously, Roman Reigns, the Usos, they all those guys live here and, you know, went to high school here. And I've gotten to know Sika pretty well over the last couple of years because his grandson, which is Roman Reigns' nephew, actually played football for us at Northeast Pensacola. So I got to know that family pretty well. And, yeah, you talked about that's a family that not a lot of people remember or not a lot of people think of when you think of first families or wrestling families. But, I mean, listen to the guys that they've had. They've had Samu, Manu, L.A. Smooth, Rosie, Roman Reigns, Yokozuna, Tonga Kid, Umaga, Rikishi, and then obviously Rikishi's kids, Jimmy and Jay, Usos. And then, you know, Peter Maivia was a blood brother of Afa and Sika's dad. And then, you know, obviously Peter Maivia had Rocky Johnson, who later on had Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. It's just one of those families that it is a business for them. It is what they do. You know, obviously a lot of them went on and played football or did other sports, but they all came back to wrestling eventually. And you're seeing that with even their kids are starting to come up and be a part of that too, or getting into it at an early age.
All right, well, Brady, let's get right to it, man. We mentioned some of the big names. Won't you give us the top five, brother, your top five, 5-1 wrestling families. They don't have to be what you think are the greatest, just your favorite. Let's go with that, your favorite five wrestling families.
So my favorite five, so I'm going to start off with the Rhodes family. Dusty Rhodes started it, and then Cody and Dustin kept it going. That was one of my – so that's number five. Number four, the Funk family. It's a family that a lot of people don't really – talk a whole lot about because they didn't get to be too popular in our area. They were more of that Amarillo area, but Dory Funk, Dory Jr., Terry Funk, that was great. Number three is another family from this area. I guess, a homer here. The Armstrong family. Bullet Bob started it, and then he had sons Steven, Brad, Scott, and Brian, who's going to be inducted. Brian James, he later became Road Dog Jesse James. He's going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame and with D-Generation X. That's number three. Number two, I'm going to do a little different. I'm going to go with the Von Erichs.
Okay.
Because I think that they were great. But then the number one, obviously, the NOI family, because of what they mean to wrestling. So many champions, so many guys that have gone on. And I think they're giving back, too. Rikishi has a school out in California that he's cultivating younger wrestlers. So I just think that family's done a lot for wrestling. When you go back to Wild Samoans, and then kind of follow that lineage all the way down.
I like that. I like that list, but I'm going to mix it up with you. All right? You ready, Brady?
Okay. Yeah.
The Rhodes family was my honorable mention just because I love the American Dream. And I was a big fan of Gold Dust, too. It was something that we had never seen before and a character that was the time. My number five is the McMahons because without them, without Vince's dad and then Vince and then everything that's happened with Stephanie and now Triple H part of that family, modern wrestling does not exist without the McMahons. So respect to them. They're my number five. Number four for me, I went with the Ordens. You went with, I know, the Funk family. I went with the Ordens. And just not because of Randy. I was always a big fan of Cowboy Bob Orton. And he was one of the bigger and better stars there in the late 70s to early 80s. So I went with the Orns as number four. Number three for me, had to represent Texas with the Von Erichs. I know all of them died except for one. And that's a bit of a tragedy with that family when it comes to men wrestling in that family. But they were tremendous and some of the best tacticians that have ever come out. Number two for me is the Anoa'i family as well, The Rock, Roman Reigns, their whole lineage, Yokozuna, everything. And like you said before, they've done so much kind of like outside of the ring to help expand the sport and to do everything and to teach further generations. But number one for me, and just not because she was here on Monday, it's got to be the Hart family. I mean, you got Bret the Hitman Hart, you got Jim the Anvil Knight Hart, you got Owen Hart, and you got, you know, they have three generations. And I was always a big Bret the Hitman Hart fan, and not to mention the Hart family dungeon there in Canada. If you were going to be a successful wrestler, you were going to be a guy that was going to be legit, you went there, brother. So the Hart family's my number one.
Yeah, I had them on my list and kept bouncing them back and forth, but I was hoping you'd pick them up. And the McMahon, that's another one that I had on my list. And, I mean, like you said, without those two, we wouldn't have what we have today. I mean, you know, Stu Hart was a legend, a pioneer that, you know, I mean, he turned out a lot of great wrestlers, not just his sons.
That's
correct. He turned out a lot of great wrestlers that came out of that dungeon. So that's a great list. I like that we had a couple of different, too. We didn't go with the, you know, the traditional ones that everybody talks about.
Yeah, I know, brother. See, that's why we do the show, man. That's why we have the weekly show, brother.
Symmetry, man. That's a good tag team. It's symmetry.
Oh, there it is. Well, brother, have a great week. It's always great catching up with you for the Old School Wrestling Talk, Brady. We'll do it again next week, my friend.
All right, man. Looking forward to it. Take care.
Brady Amon. A little Old School Wrestling Talk here on the Rap Game with RP3. We'll come back. We'll have Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com. Going to break down some New Orleans Pelicans, Anthony Davis situation, drama, however you want to describe it. Right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
According to a strange doctor, out of 14,605,000 possible outcomes for this next segment of Rap Game, only one...
We're in the end game now.
...doesn't result in half of the universe being snapped out of existence. Let's get back to Ray, because I don't feel so good.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. We're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline once again and bring on our next guest. He covers the New Orleans Pelicans for the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. It's the one and only Andrew Lopez. Andrew, how are you this morning, brother?
Dude, I'm doing great. I love the Avengers intro you had right there. And then I doubly love the going with the Block is Hot as the intro music. I'm feeling this interview now.
There we go. Look, man, that's what we try to do here, bro. That's what we try to do. Well, look, man, you got a little bit of a break. I'm sure you enjoyed yourself not having to constantly report on the drama that has become the New Orleans Pelicans. Actually, I have a few days off to relax, brother. Let's start. Media availability is today, correct? And then they're going to fly out to go up to Indiana for the game at the Pacers on Friday night. Do we expect today to get an announcement from Gail Benson or from the leadership with the Pels about Anthony Davis playing or not playing?
You know, that I would expect some sort of announcement. Where it comes from, who it comes from, remains to be seen. We're right now probably about 45 minutes, hour away from talking with Alvin Gentry. Have not heard anything from upper management or anything like that in regards to Anthony Davis. So I would lean toward him playing as of right now. It's going to be interesting to see this week if he plays because of the shoulder injury, if he plays the second night of a back-to-back. You know, they play Indiana on Friday night, and then they go ahead and play the Los Angeles Lakers on Saturday night. So right now, it's kind of up in the air. We're going to see where things are. But Since we haven't heard anything right now, I'm going to lean toward him playing this weekend.
Andrew, why doesn't Gail Benson and them just call up the NBA and say, look, here's a blank check, fine us, fill out the amount however you want it, it doesn't matter, we're not going to play him, he doesn't want to be here, and it's been a huge distraction on our coaching staff and on these young players that we're trying to give reps to, we'd rather him not be here, here's a check. Why not just take that course of action?
I think in the beginning, in the start of this, I think the idea was she didn't want to do that to Adam Silver.
Okay.
She has a very good relationship with Adam Silver. The commissioner has helped her out a lot. They've done a lot of good things together. However, things have gone different in the last week or so with how they handled the injury situation. Last week, everything kind of surrounding that, how they kind of left the arena after injuring that shoulder to go get an MRI, even though I think, you know, it sounded like possibly the Pels had already said, hey, you know, it's probably just a bruise, you're okay. So there's a lot of that going on. It wouldn't surprise me if she is probably more leaning towards doing that now than maybe she was before. But it was a prison look. I'm not going to just do that to the NBA. I'm not going to be a rogue owner who doesn't try to abide by rules. But I could see them trying to work something out here going forward.
Anyway, give me a percentage, Andrew. The percentage that Anthony Davis will, in fact, play on Saturday against the Los Angeles Lakers and the team that tried to trade for him desperately by giving up, you know, by trying to trade all their players in the Shaq statue outside the Staples Center and an autographed poster of Paula Abdul, former Laker girl. They did everything they could to try to get AD. It didn't happen. What's the percentage that AD plays Saturday in the Smoothie King Center versus the Lakers?
Like, I would like 25%, but I have no clue as to how this plays out anymore. I thought there was never a chance he was going to play a game again after he made the trade request. I was wrong. I didn't think he was going to play back-to-backs. I was wrong. I didn't think he was going to play the All-Star game. I was wrong. So what I'm saying is, if I say 25%, you better damn sure believe he's playing on Saturday night.
So, yeah, this has gone off script for sure, brother. Let's wrap it up with this. You know, Alvin Gentry's had to deal with a lot here. I think this is – a lot of it has been immensely unfair to him and what he's had to deal with. And I think part of that, I blame Dell Demps for making Gentry be the one to constantly be answering the questions when it came to the Anthony Davis situation. I thought that was extremely unprofessional in forcing Gentry to be out there out front. What's the likelihood? I know they'll bring in a new director of basketball operations, someone that legitimately will run the franchise as a basketball team, and they'll bring in a new GM. Any likelihood that Gentry has endeared himself to Gail Benson and them, that they're going to want him to come back as the head coach with how he's had to handle all of this BS?
I think Gail Benson would be all about Alvin Gentry coming back right now. She is a big Alvin supporter. I think Alvin has endeared himself to her through this process of how he's handled everything, how he's handled, you know, dealing with the roster, dealing with how going through the actual talking and being the person who actually gives the statements for the Pelicans organization for the last week. So he has gained favor with Gail Benson. I think Gail will still leave it up to the eventual GM or president of basketball operations. That's still not settled on how exactly they do it, but that person will have control and that person will get to say how things happen. Alvin Gentry did receive an extension after last season. It's unclear how long he's locked in, but it also wouldn't surprise me if, even if he is not the coach, that Alvin Gentry still has a spot in the New Orleans Pelicans organization moving forward.
Nice. Well, Andrew, I'm assuming that this weekend is going to be at least interesting for you, brother. Indianapolis tomorrow night, and then any news that happens in between now and then, but then Indy, and then Saturday should be at least interesting. I will wrap it up with this. Anyway, Anthony Davis is still in the building, but they refuse to play him against the Lakers. That they just make him sit the bench and never bring him into the game. Like, I mean, I know that's like next level petty.
You know what? It would even be funnier to me if they would like start him, pull him after 30 seconds, and then park him on the bench. That's the troll move of the day. Not just not playing him, but like start him, 30 seconds, you're done.
It'd just make him sit at the very end of the bench.
Just sit there.
Next to the wet towels and the water.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be next level troll. All right, brother. Well, look, man, I know you're busy. You squeezed in some time for us. I greatly appreciate it, brother. And we'll make sure to check all your stuff out there on NOLA.com and all the hard work you do, my friend. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, man.
Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, Tom Spicciune, covers the Pels better than most. You should check out his work. It was a heck of a show today. Joey, tremendous job, as always, brother. Fourth day in the books here working on the rap game with RP3. Appreciate the effort. Appreciate the execution. Want to thank Brady Amon for coming on for Old School Wrestling Talk. Want to thank, of course, Andrew Lopez coming on from the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com breaking down some Pels. We got a big show for you tomorrow. We'll be on for the full 2 hours between 9 and 11 here. We'll have Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South talking some football, college, alliance, NFL, whatever else we want to talk about. Connor's a great guest. He'll be on tomorrow. We'll also have Tyler Nunes from Tiger Rag. He's going to go a little bit further into the LSU men's basketball loss against Florida and help us preview the game against Tennessee on Saturday. Plus, we'll have my rant of the week and RPOs with RP3. So you got to make sure to tune in for that. Up next is the Jim Rome Show with Jim Rome. Then after that, Jordy Holberg with the Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. The brother, Ben Love, a full 3 hours of bumper-to-bumper sports today from the Tap Room River Ranch. And then Astro Line tonight, guys, 7 p.m. live from West Palm. Catcher Max Stasi will be the guest on Astro Line tonight at 7, so make sure to check that out. Y'all have a safe day, a great day out there at Acadiana. We'll holler at you tomorrow on the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.